I invite you to turn to Revelation chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12 has been talking about this conflict in heaven and earth. The center has been Israel. Israel has been the center of this entire chapter. Now, just to remind us, we are already in the tribulation, and we have passed the midpoint of the tribulation, and we're at the point where Christ is ready to come back. There are parenthetical sections in the Scriptures, especially in the book of Revelation. Chapter 7 was the first. Chapter 10, verse 1 through chapter 11, verse 14 was the second. And now we're in the third parenthetical section. This is a long section, beginning in chapter 12, going through chapter 4. The parenthetical sections are used to catch us up to time. So chronology has already been developed. And so as to not disturb that chronology, these parenthetical sections are given to bring us up to speed of what's been going on. We already know that in the seven-year period of the tribulation, the abomination of desolation has already taken place, meaning that this contract that the Antichrist made with Israel in regards to their temple and their worship has stopped. So 3.5 years into that process, it has stopped. And he demands worship for himself. And we're at the point also, even though we haven't read it yet, we're at the point where people have to worship him or die. The commerce is done by him in regards to that worship, the taking the mark of the beast, either on your forehead or on your right hand. So all that's already been taking place, even though you haven't seen it yet. Well, we'll see that a little later here. But all these things have already taken place. You're in the latter part of the tribulational era, and Christ is just days in coming back. Now, you wouldn't know that if you hadn't chronologically looked at what had already preceded. Now, remember, the seventh trumpet blast has already blown. We see that in chapter 11, verse 15. That ensues the last judgments, which is the bowl judgments. So you have this parenthetical section. In those bowl judgments, they come like a finale. I liken it to fireworks. At the end of the fireworks, there is this finale. Boom, 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 boom. And that's exactly how those bowl judgments go. They come very, very quickly. So this parenthetical section that we're looking at is talking about Israel. We've talked about its history, how ever since the fall, how Satan has tried to stop God's effort in regards to the redemptive history. And I give you plenty of examples from the Old Testament, some from the New Testament, how he has tried to do that. He was unsuccessful in bringing forth Israel's Messiah, Jesus Christ, even though Israel as a nation hasn't accepted Jesus as their Messiah yet, there is a remnant that are receiving Jesus. The great multitude is really Gentiles by and large today. And that will be until that time stops. And we find that time will stop in chapter 15 at a particular point. Beginning now in verse 10 of chapter 12, Revelation. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren, who accused them before our God day and night, has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows that his time is short. The first thing that you see here in verse 10 is the identity of a loud voice. Now, that loud voice cannot be, in an absolute way, we don't know who that is. Some possibilities have been suggested. It could be God. It could be angels. Angels have already been corresponding already. It could be the 24 elders, the martyrs, saints. that we saw in chapter 6, verse 10, because they're crying out to God, "How long, O Lord, till you basically vindicate us from the blood that has been shed?" We've seen some of the response to that prayer in chapter 8 in regards to the initial trumpet blasts and the occurrences in the altar of incense and the brazen altar that's described there as well. We find that they are in chapter 6 in the fifth seal judgment, that they're underneath the altar of incense. And so we saw those correlations as things began to develop. There had been a response already, but this is an additional response as well. It could be them responding in regards to what's taking place. We don't know absolutely. And so we just kind of leave it there. There's that voice that shouts out. Now, support for the voice being the martyr saints during the tribulation is also seen in this verse in another way. The loud voice mentions the accusers of the brethren. So this would eliminate angels and indicate saints in heaven. And the loud voice may very well be the shout of triumph of saints longing for and anticipating the ultimate victory and the triumph of Christ. Remember, the chronological sequence at this particular point is just days before the coming Christ. So you have to keep that in mind. Secondly, the salvation mentioned in verse 10 is now impending, and it refers to not salvation in regards to eternal life, not from guilt from sin, but rather salvation or deliverance and completion of the divine program in the coming of Jesus Christ. Remember, in the release of the seventh trumpet blast, verse 15, chapter 11, I'm going to read that again. "Then the seventh angel sounded, and there was a loud voice in heaven saying, 'The kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of His Christ, and He shall reign forever and ever.'" And that's announced at the seventh trumpet blast, where the last releasing of the judgments, the bold judgments, will take place. We'll see that in chapter 16, those particular judgments. So now God is now setting and orchestrating the final events for that those judgments, and is preparing Himself to come. Hence, Satan knows his time is short, referred to in verse 12 of chapter 12. A third thing, too, to remember here is that the victory of the saints. Now, as you read this, you think, victory? Where's the victory? We're in the tribulation. How? We know He's going to kill many believers. What do you mean, victory? Well, the victory of the saints in this hour is revealed in verse 11. It's described or declared that the saints overcome Satan. He's referred to as the great red dragon in verse 3. He's seen by descriptive names as the serpent of old, the devil, Satan, the deceiver of the world. He's already been cast down to the earth, and that will happen at the midpoint of the tribulation. And so all that has already been taking place. His onslaught in killing many, many people. We know in chapter 7, in that parenthetical section, that there is great multitude of people and tribes and tongues from every nation. And these are redeemed people, as it begins to explain itself. They were martyred for their faith. It says that they overcame him, referring to Satan, by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. So first off, the accusation of Satan is nullified by the blood of the Lamb which renders the believers pure and possibly spiritual victory here. You know, in Matthew chapter 10, and by the way, that's a very interesting chapter for a number of reasons. In Matthew chapter 10, he sends them out, his disciples out by twos, right? These 12 apostles. Sends them out by twos. When you look at the progression there, Jesus says, you will not go through the entire city, or you'll not go through the entire nation of Israel until I come back again. So he tells them in the midst of this something, fast-forwarding beyond the time in which they're being sent out at this point. He tells them that father is going to betray son betray father, daughter-in-law is betraying mother-in-law against their daughter-in-law. So there's family opposition betraying one another. So the enemies of their own house will betray them. And in that episode, it tells us that all this is going to be taking place, and then the Son of Man comes back. And so part of that is going to be a time in which there's going to be great persecution, going beyond the time in which these apostles are being sent out, up until the point of the return of Jesus, the second coming of Christ. So that chapter is very interesting as you read it as a whole and look at what Jesus is talking about. And also, Jesus already knows he's being rejected. He's going to be betrayed. That is already in the know. And there's a shift in his ministry. You can see that specifically in chapter 11 as he gives indictments to the major place of his ministry in Capernaum, Bethsaida, and Chorazin. And he gives judgments on all those. Chapter 12, we find that the religious elite are ready to kill Jesus. So he knows that there's a shift in his ministry. He knows that he's going to be going to the cross. He already knew that before. But now the shifting of that movement is very certain in regards to the gospel accounts. In verse 12, it tells us just before this that they did not love their lives, in verse 11, unto death. In other words, the riches that they saw was the glory of heaven. In chapter 10 in Matthew, Jesus said, do not fear him who kills the body. And after that, they can't do anything. But rather, fear him who can destroy the body and the soul in Gehenna. Fear him! So they look at the highest priority in the relationship to God. Not this life. Not the earthly conference. It's all going to pass away. These people that are taking the mark, according to Revelation chapter 14, everybody that takes that mark and worships the beast, those two engagements. It's not one absent of the other. It's both. When that happens, chapter 14 says, they have sealed their doom. All of them will have their place in the fire of brimstone and sulfur. There's a place of no return for them. And they have sold themselves to get what they can in this life in order to survive. And yet they will lose their souls. Their souls will go to eternal hell. And friends, people are willing to do that even today. And really, what you're seeing is a preconditioning process of what's ahead. And if we're failing now, how well we will succeed as times get worse. Really, this should be strengthening the church of what's taking place. Now, verse 12. The voice from heaven continues. We find two things. The rejoicing in heaven and the woeing of the inhabitants of the earth. So first off, the voice exhorts the listeners, especially those in the heavens, to rejoice. Because there's great victory coming. Therefore, rejoice in the heavens and you who dwell in them. Why? Because Christ is coming back. He's going to rule and reign. He's going to bring his people with him, and they will rule and reign with him as well. This is a time of victory. But, secondly, it pronounces a solemn woe upon the inhabitants of the earth and on the sea. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time. So the awfulness of the hour is attributed to the fact that the devil has been cast to the earth. Now, we've already saw that he has access into the heavenlies, not into the mountain of God. Well, we've looked at Job chapter 1, chapter 2. We know that he roars as a roaring lion, seeking whom he devour, chapter 5, in 1 Peter, verse 8. We know that there is a place in which heavenly beings do approach God. They are given assignments. They are given permission or denial of certain things, including Satan. But now he's restricted to the earth. He has no access into the heavenlies any longer. He's restricted to the earth in the final stage before he's cast into this place of prison for 1,000 years before he's released again, where he'll deceive the nations one last time. So he knows this time is short. And so the upheaval and the wrath of Satan is ensued on the earth. If you will, all hell is bracing loose. We already saw in one of the trumpet blasts that there is a creature fallen who's been given a key, and he opens up this abyss, and demons are like a scorpion, causing great pain on those who do not have the mark of God on their forehead. And they will do that for 5 months. Now, it doesn't tell us what happens to those demons. I'm assuming they're still unleashed. We already know here that Satan and his angels, according to verse 7 and 8, they are cast to the earth now. We're talking about demons, evil spirits. The place is filled with demons. And they will do all the unthinkable atrocities to human beings on the earth, let alone all the other things that we've already developed from all the seal and the trumpet judgments alone. The second main part, in verses 13 to 16 here, we see the persecution of Israel in the Great Tribulation. Now, it's already been going on, but again, it's catching us up to time to particular information of things that are taking place that we did not know yet. And so in verse 13, "And when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman." The woman is identified there in verses 1 and 2 as Israel. Now, this is a remnant of Israel. And the reason I say that, because when you look at the whole contextual argument from the Old Testament into the New Testament, you find that there is the nation of Israel that is still there. They're still in Jerusalem. But, as you remember, in the abomination of desolation described by Daniel, when Jesus gives that account in Matthew chapter 24, verse 15, he follows that and says, "Let the reader take note to run, to go to the wilderness." And that's what's happening here. And yet the nation is still intact. And Zechariah talks about this in the first verses of that particular chapter, that the nations of the world are going against the nation of Israel. We have the account of the Gog Magog account in chapter 38 of Ezekiel taking place. And by the way, they're coming at the time in which they are dwelling safely. The only time that's going to happen in fast-forward history, if we can look at it that way, is that time of the tribulational era in the first 3.5 years. So at the very end of that period, when this agreement's going to be broken with Israel, that's going to start. Now, it will ensue all the way into the part in chapter 16 of the Harmagedon battle that is there. Armageddon. In the valley of Megiddo, Jezreel, Carmel, all that whole entire region. And extends downward to the coastland all the way into the region of the valley of Jehoshaphat, the Kidron Valley, and continuing even south. At least 180 miles, an onslaught when Jesus Christ comes back against the enemies that are going against Israel. That's going to be recorded in chapter 20. Ezekiel goes on to say, in the first two verses of chapter 14, this onslaught, that the nation of Israel and in Jerusalem, they're being ravished. And basically, their decimation is at their throat. Then in verses 3 and 14, chapter 14, Zechariah, Jesus Christ comes back on the Mount of Olives at that point. So you have to realize that the nation's still there, the nations of the world are coming against them, and yet those that are heeding the cry of Jesus in the abomination of desolation account that he's recounting to them in regards to Daniel chapter 9, verse 27, and in chapter 12, there is a remnant that is fleeing in from Judea into the wilderness. So keep that picture in mind. So the woman, as he's describing here, is the remnant of Israel that flee. So immediately the aftermath of Satan is beginning as he's cast from heaven, he's thrust to the earth, his persecution of the woman which has brought forth the male child, the Messiah Jesus, in verse 13. And this will occur at the midpoint of the tribulation of that seven-year period called the tribulational period. This is now the great tribulation of the time of Jacob's trouble, the last half of the 7 years. And this is all recorded in Matthew chapter 24, verse 15 to 22. We've looked at that passage already. I'm not going to recount it to you. You can take a note if you need to. If you need to go back and look at that, you can do that. The persecution of Israel is a part of satanic program to thwart and to hinder the work of God. And remember, he was unsuccessful historically from that pronouncement of Genesis chapter 3 that the seed of the woman would crush the head of the serpent. He was unsuccessful in that. The Messiah, birthed through the nation of Israel, had come. His name is Jesus Christ. He was unsuccessful. He ascended into heaven. But he knows that if he can destroy the nation of Israel, Jesus Christ cannot come back to fulfill his promise to that nation in the Abrahamic, Davidic, and the New Covenant arrangement. And he knows that. And so he's going after Israel. That's the target. It has been the target. And now the final segment of the time before the coming of Jesus Christ, he knows he has to get Israel and put them out completely to thwart God's purpose for time and eternity in regards to the promises made them. A second part of this is that into this scene of persecution is injected a divine intervention in verse 14. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she's nourished for a time, times, and half a time. So the woman is described as giving two wings of a great eagle to enable her to fly into the wilderness, into her place. Now, this is a figure of speech. It's derived from a couple places in the Old Testament. In Exodus chapter 19, verse 4, and Deuteronomy chapter 32, verses 11 and 12, it describes these things. God told Moses to speak to the Israel and say, in Exodus chapter 19, verse 14, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. So you see this figure of speech that's already laid out there. In the Song of Moses, in Deuteronomy chapter 32, Moses spoke in the hearing of all the assembly of Israel. And in verses 10 and 12, he states this. He found him, that is the Lord, he found him, in reference to Israel, in the desert, in the wasteland, a howling wilderness. He encircled him. He instructed him. He kept him as the apple of his eye, as an eagle stirs up its nest, hovers over its young, spreading out its wings, taking them up, and carrying them on its wings, so the Lord alone led him. So you have the expressions already seen in reality of what God did to deliver them and to bring them in the location of the wilderness. That's a character witness of a prefigured language. In reality, what God's going to do in the future of this remnant that goes on. They're not going to be lifted up in the sense of transported physically, but God's going to protect them as if he's taking them under his wings and bringing them to the location. Now, we've already saw in Revelation chapter 12, verse 6, this expression as well, that God would protect them and has prepared a place for them. Then the woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God that they should, notice the they, that plural pronoun, God has made a provision of whoever they are, whether it's angels or whoever they are, should feed her, that remnant, for 1,260 days. Now that's according to the Jewish lunar calendar of 360 days, and that is 3.5 years. So when Satan is cast down at that beginning point, at the midpoint of the tribulation, when the Antichrist goes in the temple and the abomination of desolation, these remnant are taken. God has prepared a place for them, and he's going to provide for them in the wilderness. Here's another expression of that in verse 14. And the reason why he's recounting again, because Satan's going to go after them. They're fleeing. He's going after them. He doesn't want any of them to escape. Remember, he has to kill every single one of them so that God cannot come back to a nation. The nation of Israel. And so the same flight is indicated in Matthew 24:16 of this fleeing, where Christ exhorts them to go to Judea, to flee to the mountains. And here in verse 14, chapter 12, it implies that there is a supernatural care of a remnant of Israel who are going to heed Jesus' warning in the fleeing to the wilderness. Thirdly, the time element of Israel suffering is described, according to verse 14 of chapter 12, Revelation, as time, times, and half a time. Now, we've already saw three accounts of the 3.5 years, or 42 months. We saw that in chapter 11, verses 1 and 2. We see it here in verse 6 of chapter 12. Here it seems to recount the same thing, but using this particular language. And this is not new. It is actually seen in the Old Testament to prefigure the same time period, specifically in Daniel chapter 12. So this again is a reference to the 3.5 years. Again, God is reemphasizing the time period. The mentioning of time as being one unit, the second reference to times being two units, which is the addition of one other half-time, which is a half of that period, a cycle, equaling 3.5 years. God is very clear on the time element on which things are taking place. So the parallel references that can be found in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. And I want to turn there. That's a very important passage, because it gives us more detailed information of the occurrences of what are going to be taking place. In verse 25 of chapter 7 of Daniel, this Antichrist, he will receive his authority from Satan. He's not indwelt by Satan himself. We see that in chapter 16. But he does give his authority to him. It will mention that in chapter 13. It also says that same thing in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, that the devil, Satan, is giving his authority to the Antichrist. So the Antichrist, verse 25, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High. He shall persecute the saints of the Most High and shall intend to change times and law, which is already being done now. The spirit of the Antichrist is on the earth. We know that. The Bible tells that in 1 John chapter 4, verse 3. So the spirit, but now at this particular point, that spirit is a dwelling an individual. I personally think that Satan is orchestrating the events of that time period, the things that go into that time period, and what's occurring, what we're reading now. He is now orchestrating that through the spirit of the Antichrist in the events that are occurring on the earth right now and unifying the world as a whole with everything that needs to take place for this occurrence. They know what they need to do. God has given us that revelation. Remember, this revelation is given to the church. They may be blessed, according to Revelation chapter 1, verse 4. When you're blessed because you read it, you heed it, and you're going to do it. This is something necessary for us to know, to warn people, to tell people what's going to be taking place. You are the ones that have this information. Now, what they do with it, that's going to be laid on their lap. But we are responsible to know it, and God's going to bless us by that. And so he's telling us here, then saints will be given into the hand for times and half a time. Daniel 7:25. Again, he uses that language. Chapter 12. Again, it's reiterated. And if you read this entire chapter, this is the last half of the tribulational era. And though it tells us in verse 7, Daniel now hears the man clothed in linen. This is an angelic creature who was above the waters of the river. When he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven, and he swore by him who lives forever and ever that it shall be for a time, times, and half a time. Again, 3.5 years, and he's describing that for the nation of Israel. So in the persecution of Israel, the serpent is described in chapter 12 of Revelation, verse 15, as casting water as a flood out of the mouth, out of Satan's mouth, to a fleeing remnant of Israel. In other words, as they're fleeing Judea and they're going to the wilderness, Satan's coming after there. And he is going to spew out what is called water as a flood out of his mouth. And you think, what? What is that? I don't get that. Well, let's read that again. So the serpent in verse 15 of chapter 12, Revelation, spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. He's going to kill them. But the earth helped the woman. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. Now there are two primary interpretations that arise from this. These are the two top in the most conservative evangelical scholarship. First off, Satan supernaturally causes a physical flood in an attempt to engulf the fleeing Jewish remnant. That's one of the interpretations. A second one of interpretation of that would be that the water is used figuratively, in a figurative sense, to describe a satanically led army to destroy the running away people. Now, how am I going to support? How are you going to support this? Well, here's the support. The biblical support for these two types of interpretation actually exist in Job chapter 1. After Satan is given permission, granted by God, to test Job to remove all that he possessed, Satan used a band of raiders called the Sabaeans, and he also used the Chaldeans to kill Job's servants and livestock. Okay? Satan did that. He used physical representations of these particular nations and raiders to go after Job's servants and his livestock. Satan used fire. Talking about natural phenomena. Fire. He used fire and great wind to do the same, including the death of his own children, Job's children. So he used physical parts of an army, raiders, and he used natural things like fire and wind to do what he needed to do, to kill and to destroy. Also, water is seen in the book of Revelation symbolically in reference to the nations of the people in Revelation chapter 17, verses 1 and 2, and then in verse 15. In verses 1 and 2 of chapter 17, one of the seven angels, verse 1, chapter 17, Revelation, who had the seven bowls came and talked with me, saying to him, "Come and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot." This is the apostate church. "Who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth, and made them drunk with the wine of her fornication." What? The great harlot sits on many waters? God gives you the commentary to that. He gives you the understanding or the interpretation of that in verse 15. "Then he said to me, 'The waters which you see, which the harlot sits, are peoples, nations, multitudes, and tongues.'" So it may refer to that vast army that is already orchestrated to go against the nation of Israel that Zechariah describes about the nations of the world going against Israel. And he says in part, some of them that go after the fleeing ones, that could be it too. But nonetheless, God has prepared a place for them, and he's going to bring them like an eagle under their wings. He's going to gather them up, and God literally is going to open up the earth to ensue that water, if it is that water, or the armies that are going to be sent. God's going to open up the earth. And has God done that before? Look at Numbers chapter 16. God would open the earth and swallow up Korah and the other that company there with him, and then he closed it back up. So in either case, these interpretations, God supernaturally intervenes for his Jewish people to swallow up the opposition there. The last thing is this, in verse 17, Revelation, Satan's rage. Now, you don't think he's hot already? He is really hot against all the followers of the Lamb. Verse 17, the dragon was enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. So what the earth did in swallowing up the flood of the waters by the dragon ensued anger in Satan. So since Satan could not touch that remnant, God had placed that remnant in a prepared place for 3.5 years. And remember, we've already saw that according to Daniel chapter 11, Ammon, and Moab, and Edom are protected. And that is that region that they're going to. Some think this is the place of Selah or the place of Petra. And since Satan couldn't stop what God is doing to protect that remnant, he's going to make war against every child of God. All inclusive here, I believe, of Jew and Gentile alike. All those who name the name of Christ, they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And we saw that expression already in chapter 6, in regards to those already being slain. This may include the 144,000. They're already referred to in chapter 7, verse 2. They're seen in chapter 14, verses 1 to 5. And there is a possibility that they may be slain at this particular point, somewhere in this last 3.5 years. There's another interpretation, but I'll wait till we get to that point. I'm not going to do it now. It may also include all the believing tribulation saints that I've already described in chapter 7. All the sons of Abraham by faith, that is all the Jews who accept Jesus as Messiah. And so this will also include, remember, it's going to kill the two witnesses, right? And it tells us, according to chapter 11, verses 1 and 2, of these witnesses, they are ministering in the last 3.5 years of the tribulation. So somewhere at the end, they're going to die. God's going to take them back up. So, and it tells us that the Antichrist is going to kill them. And remember, he's received his authority from Satan. So this will include them as well. And so they live by the direction of God's word, these faithful ones. They're pronounced by Jesus in Matthew chapter 4, verse 4. And in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 3, as people that do not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Friends, how important is the Word of God to you? When the earth falls apart, is the Word of God center in your life? If it's not now, do you think it's going to be then? He prepares, if He's going to prepare them for this season, does He not prepare us for this season at hand? God's words are precise. The testimony of Jesus, it says. That's their rock. It's the testimony that Jesus gave. His truths that He taught and that are revealed in the New Testament. They hold to these things. These are persecuted believers. They will give further evidence of their salvation because they're not going to buckle under. They will be obedient and they will not consider their lives to be precious. He tells us that.